So in the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada speaks about how we're in an abnormal state of life in the material world because we're threatened by non-existence. The tigress of nescience is constantly following us, he says. And this is a scary state of affairs. Imagine, or maybe already in a dream, you might have had a situation where some deadly force is following you, like a tiger, or the police, or somebody chasing you. And everyone, along with their birth, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, is assured of death. And therefore, there's fear at every second in the material world. Bhayam dvitiya binibesha tasya. And this fear arises from a vision of being separate from Krishna. Actually, we're not separate from Krishna. And one who has tasted this bliss of being connected to Krishna, this goes way beyond philosophical speculation, actually. Anyone, even for a second, if they taste this bliss and feel that I'm actually something more than this body, then their life becomes inexplicably changed forever. And they want to taste that because it's the nature of the soul to taste happiness. Rupa Goswami explains that there are different qualities of happiness and different levels. The first level is material happiness, which to intelligent people, to philosophical people, to munis, is no happiness at all. Naishkarmyamapyachutavarjitam nashobate gyanamalam niranjanam. It's described how material fruit of activities, the charpitam karma, they're miserable from beginning to end. But somebody in the darkness of illusion thinks that actually there's some happiness in the material world. And Jayadev Goswami explains that, well, actually there is. But it's just like if you were in the desert and you were dying of thirst, and you were hoping to find an oasis full of water, and someone comes to you and says, yes, I'll give you water. And you think, oh, very nice. And then they pull out an eyedropper, and they give you one drop of water. You can't deny that it's water. Water it is, but it's not enough. So the material has an appearance of water, and it's just like that, says Prahlad Maharaj. Kutra shrisha shruti sukham mrigatrishni rupa. It's like the mirage in the desert. It appears to be real, but it's not real. And so he says, where is it, actually? Where is that happiness everyone's looking for? It's Shruti Sukham. It's what you hear about it, but you never actually get it. Everyone hears and thinks there's some happiness right around the corner, but it's not available, actually, in the material world. So Rupa Goswami says this is the lowest stage of so-called happiness, and then above that is Brahmananda, or the happiness of identifying oneself as the Supreme Brahman. And this is actually the beginning of spiritual life. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, na shochati na kankshati, samak sarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labhate param. It's where we can enter into bhakti, actually. And in this position, there's a great relief, actually, from material life, because material life is a huge burden. I carry around this burden of conception of I am this body. And when I come to understand I have nothing to do with this body, that means I'm not responsible. I don't have to carry this burden, this huge burden of debt. And material life means, as these verses are saying, we have to work hard to maintain something, to pay off all these debts. But actually, we have nothing to do with the material world at all. Asango hyayam purushaha, says the Vedanta Sutra. If you actually come close and see and find out, you'll see you have nothing to do with this world. And that's a huge relief. And in that, there's nashochati nakankshati. There's neither hankering nor lamentation, which takes place on the material platform. I'm hankering for something that I don't have, and I'm lamenting for that I didn't get enough, even when I do get it. And then the highest position of happiness is devotional service. And this means a reawakening our relationship with Krishna. Therefore, the Srimad Bhagavatam says, Bhayam dvitiya abhinibesha tasyad ishar apetasya viparya yosmritihi. When we're in a position turned around from Krishna, all we experience is fear and lamentation. and the burden of material life. But tanmayato tad buddha abhajet tan yeshaika yekam gurudeva tatma. If one comes to the fortunate position of taking up bhakti yoga and uses his intelligence in a one-pointed way towards worshiping Krishna and the spiritual master, then one comes to the safe side of life and actually can enjoy this eternal happiness of relationship with Krishna. So Krishna comes to this world to teach this to everybody because he doesn't want the living entities to suffer in this world. And the pastime of him as breathing is mentioned in the Brahma Samhita. Yashaika nishvasita kalamata valamya jivanti loma vilaja jagananata Vishnur mahan sahya yashakala visheshu govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. Lord Mahavishnu is breathing out and breathing in, and each time he's giving an opportunity for the unlimited souls to take up devotional service. And therefore, in that time when the material worlds manifest, he comes in innumerable forms and incarnations and gives an opportunity for everyone to come back to Godhead. And one of the ways he does this is by speaking Bhagavad Gita. And Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Panishado Gavo Dogda Gopala Nandana Parto Vatsa Sudhir Bhukta Dugdang Gitamritam Mahat. The Bhagavad Gita is just like a wish-fulfilling cow, Kamadenu. And Krishna is famous as? He's a coward boy. He's famous as a coward boy, and he's milking the calf, the cow of Bhagavad Gita. And Arjuna is just like a calf, and he's drinking this milk. Krishna's feeding them the milk of Bhagavad Gita. But the milk is unlimited, just like it says in the Brahma Samhita, Sriya Kanta Kanta Parama Purusha Kalpataravo Druma Bhumish Chintamani Ganamayis Toyamamritam Kataganam Natyam Gamanamapi Vamsi Priyasaki Chiranandam Jyoti Panamapi Tarasyadnyam Api Cha Sayatra Shirabdi Sravati Surabhi Bhyashti Sumata. I had to do the whole verse to get to that part. That the Surabhi cows in the spiritual world, they give oceans of milk, unlimited milk. So Bhagavad Gita is like that, like a wish-fulfilling cow. And the milk is for everybody. Krishna's distributing it to Arjuna, but it goes everywhere. It's meant for everybody in the whole world. So anybody who drinks that milk can become free from this illusion that I am this body. It's described by Maitreya to Vidura. Just like in a dream sometimes, you might see that you're getting your head cut off. But that's not possible, because when your head's cut off, you can't really see what's going on because your head's off. But still you suffer and you think like that. But as soon as you wake up to the fact that you're not actually getting your head cut off, you exist in a completely different plane, then this, you come to your real senses. So our illusion is like watching a film or watching a dream, and we identify with it and then we suffer. So Srila Prabhupada says in the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna comes, especially as Vyasadeva, and he himself comes to speak the Bhagavad Gita specifically so that we can divert our mind away from the mundane attributes of the material world and towards the spiritual world, which is contained within the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam and all these literatures. So it's specifically there to absorb our minds. So it's Krishna's great mercy that he brings the Bhagavad Gita to this world. So the more we drink from that Bhagavad Gita, we take that milk, the more we'll become nourished and strong, and the more our mind will go towards the lotus feet of Krishna and the spiritual world, and we'll actually feel spiritual health. Spiritual life is not a matter of speculation, as says Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Raja vidya raja kuyam pavitram idam uttamam prakyakshavagamam tarmyam susukam kartamavyam. He mentions that it is the king of all education. It's the most secret of all secrets. And because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it's the perfection of religion. It's everlasting and is joyfully performed. So he says you can experience it for yourself. You can feel it for yourself. If you follow the Bhagavad Gita, read Bhagavad Gita, it's not something theoretical, but actually everyone can experience the happiness that comes from Bhagavad Gita. And that's what spurs us on and on, because we've tasted something in the Bhagavad Gita and we would like more. So tonight, I think everyone could feel, just, of course, it went pretty quick, didn't it? I think it was only 2.5 hours. 2 hours and 35 minutes or something like that? 2 hours and 40 minutes? And we were trying to go slow, too. So, did anybody have any experience as they were going through the Bhagavad Gita? Yes? Do we have microphones available up there?
I came from work very stressed and very agitated mind because I was stuck in the project. And when I walked in, and I was thinking maybe I will just, you know, go in the middle room and I'll do my work and I'll listen. But then when I opened the book and the way it sounded so sweet, and it was just so sweet that I didn't want it. I forgot about everything and I just wanted to not get up until I finished the whole rest.
Did
of
I?
It. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Nice realization. Yeah. Anybody else have an experience chanting the whole Bhagavad Gita? Okay, I'll tell you mine. There's certain chapters that I've chanted at different times in my life in different places. For some reason, the last couple of years, we've been chanting at Govardhan, chapter 13. I don't know why, but we just got onto chapter 13. We chanted a lot of other chapters too, but especially 13 we do every day. And when I got to that chapter 13, I was feeling like I was in Govardhan, just, you know, chanting the chapter, remembering, and with other chapters too. So there's something about the transcendental sound that transports one to another place. Anyone else? Rakshit Prabhu.
It was very nice to chant all the Sanskrit shlokas, but my realization of the whole thing came more in the purport that you just now gave about what Prabhupada says in the introduction. And the message there that the Bhagavad Gita is giving one an opportunity to connect with Krishna. And I also connect with your class yesterday in the Sunday program where you said that every living entity wants to connect with the higher consciousness. You said that yesterday. And that struck me in my mind. It is, in other ways, it has said that everyone wants to repose one's love someplace. And in wanting to repose one's love, one wants to repose it in a permanent and a stable place. Because in the material world, it's just temporary and flickering. So the Bhagavad Gita is offering an opportunity for one to repose one's love on the highest platform, which is with Krishna, to connect with him, and the true happiness is there.
Thank
and that's
you very
what
much. Thank you.
I got out.
Jai. Narhari Prabhu, can we hear your realizations, please?
Today when I was chanting the Bhagavad Gita, I just felt like my false ego getting, like, being fought at. So I just felt, I don't know, it was how I was feeling. I never felt like this before. I've read the Gita, I mean, the Sanskrit or the English many times, but today when I was reading especially, I guess the mood which was set and the association of the devotees, I just felt like my false ego was getting dissolved. It was a feeling, something I could feel. Can't corroborate that, but
I can corroborate it.
Okay, please.
There's a verse in the third canto, fourth part, third canto. It's the Lord Kapiladev speaking to his mother Devahuti, and he says that devotional service dissolves the subtle body, just as food is dissolved in the stomach. It's digested like that. So when we come into an atmosphere like this where we're chanting and hearing in an intense way, then actually it's true. We don't have to do anything. We just have to be there. One time Prabhupada said, God helps those who help themselves, and helping oneself means putting oneself in front of transcendental sound vibration. So if you come and you put yourself in that place, in fact, you know, Srila Prabhupada said that in the beginning when he came to hear his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he didn't understand him very well because his speech was very erudite. And he had practically, I think, learned English from encyclopedia or dictionary. And the way he spoke was, it was hard for Prabhupada to understand for one reason or another. But he said he stayed and listened nonetheless. And just by listening and listening, he actually became, he was marked by his spiritual master, who said that, I've marked him that he likes to hear. And he accepted him for initiation. And there was a point at which he told the story when they were on pilgrimage in Vrindavan, and there was a chance for everyone to go see Sheshashai Vishnu. It was the last chance before the deities would be closed and they wouldn't be able to see the deity again. Or they could stay at the Pandal and hear Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. And everyone, almost everyone, went to the Sheshashai, except our Srila Prabhupada stayed, and there was a couple other devotees that stayed to listen. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, what will they see there? Because they haven't heard properly. More important to hear than it is. So anyway, the subtle body, the false ego, everything becomes rectified and purified and dissolved, actually, by the process of devotional service. I can show you that verse later. Jai, thank you. Any other realization? Yes, Rajiv. Microphone coming up for you.
I thought it will take 4 hours, and I'll catch half of it.
I did too.
So, but it was wonderful. Just the 18th chapter is when I was here, and I was just wondering if we could do it more often on other on special occasions also, if it takes only 2.5 hours.
I was thinking that too. I was thinking, why don't we do this every night? I mean, once you get used to it, you know, it's like anything. You kind of, but maybe we could do it, you know, regularly. I like that idea. I'll bet Kishore's into it, probably, right? To some regular basis, we could do, you know, some special day. Once a month or something, that would be nice. Okay, well, good suggestion. Thank you very much. Who else? Bhakta Eric. I'd like to welcome Bhakta Eric. This is his second time to our temple here. Hare Krishna.
I naively thought it'd be in English, or in English. So, yeah, I was hoping maybe sometime we could do it again, but all in English. But, yeah, it was definitely, yeah, it was awesome that it was in Sanskrit. I think it was a lot better, but it was really hard for me to follow. So,
yeah.
I need to practice.
That's a good idea. We can do it all in English, or we can do parts in English. One thing, sometimes with a transcendental sound, this kind of goes to the previous point I was making, even if you can't understand it, if you hear it and you're in the same environment where it's being chanted, it'll still have an effect. So if you feel frustrated because you're not used to chanting Sanskrit like most of the devotees here, if you still hear and just let it go in, it'll actually have its effect. And it will purify the heart. And you'll see that the powerful effect of that sound will be there also. So don't feel like you missed out just because you couldn't chant. Anybody else?
I usually pick some chapters to recite based on the important verses. So while going through the fourth chapter, I thought there are a lot of wonderful verses. So I think that is some chapter which I can recite in my chapter a day. And during preaching, we quote a lot of verses, but I usually don't know which chapter they fall in, some of them. So today I got to know a lot of them, and I can quote them while mentioning.
Nice. That's a good point. When you do the whole thing, you get a more of a perspective of the Gita rather than we do a little bit here, a little bit there. And the fourth chapter does have a lot of good preaching verses. Anybody else? Yes, Narahari.
I was reading Gita Mahatmya yesterday. It's one of the portions from the Padma Puran wherein Lord Shiva is describing to his wife Parvati about the glories of each of the chapters. You know, as I was going through, in the 18th chapter, I was surprised that you know, everyone's working so hard to obtain some, like you mentioned, you know, something tangible, some material benefit, some benefit. But Lord Shiva is explaining to his wife Parvati that a poor Brahmana, just by chanting five verses of the 18th chapter, not even the whole 18th chapter, he attained so much of pious credits that he actually became Indra. You know, to become an Indra, you have to perform like so much of austerity, more than 100 Ashwamedha yagyas and so many things. But just by chanting Bhagavad Gita, you know, the and not even the entire chapter, just five verses in the chapter, he could attain so much of piety. So you know this. Of course, we understand that, you know, we are not after material sense of enjoyment. But at the same time, but if we stick to this process, then Krishna provides everything. So I was amazed just by sticking to the process of devotional service by chanting a chapter a day. Krishna fulfills all your material necessities and also takes care of your spiritual needs. So I found that very enlightening.
That's such an excellent point. Can somebody back up what he just said with a verse from the Bhagavad Gita? Taneshu yagyeshu tapasu chaiva. You know where that's from? Look at the last verse of the eighth chapter. He said, if you just do devotional service and everything else comes. So this is a verse that says that. Page 392. Shall we sing it together? Vedeshu yagyeshu tapasu chaiva danishu yat punya palam pratishtam atyeti tat sarva midam baditva yogi param stanam upaiti chadyam. Vedeshu. In the study of the Vedas. Yagneshu, in the performances of yagya, sacrifice. Tapasu, in undergoing different types of austerities. Cha, also. Eva, certainly. Danishu, in giving charities. Yat, that which. Punyapalam, result of pious work. Pratishtam, indicated. Atyeti, surpasses. Tatsarvam, all those. Idam, this. Viditva, knowing. Yogi, the devotee. Param, supreme. Stanam, abode. Upaiti, achieves. Cha, also. Adyam, original. A person who accepts the path of devotional service is not bereft of the results derived from studying the Vedas, performing sacrifices, undergoing austerities, giving charity, or pursuing philosophical and fruitive activities. Simply by performing devotional service, he attains all these, and at the end, he reaches the supreme eternal abode. Purport. This verse is the summation of the seventh and eighth chapters, which particularly deal with Krishna consciousness and devotional service. One has to study the Vedas under the guidance of the spiritual master and undergo many austerities and penances while living under his care. A brahmachari has to live in the home of the spiritual master just like a servant, and he must beg alms from door to door and bring them to the spiritual master. He takes food only under the master's order, and if the master neglects to call the student for food that day, the student fasts. These are some of the Vedic principles for observing brahmacharya. After the student studies the Vedas under the master for some time, at least from the age of 5 to 20, he becomes a man of perfect character. Study of the Vedas is not meant for the recreation of armchair speculators, but for the formation of character. After this training, the brahmacharya is allowed to enter into household life and marry. When he is a householder, he has to perform many sacrifices so that he may achieve further enlightenment. He must also give charity according to the country, time, and candidate, discriminating among charity in goodness, in passion, and in ignorance, as described in Bhagavad Gita. Then after retiring from household life, upon accepting the order of Vanaprastha, he undergoes severe penances, living in the forest, dressing with tree bark, not shaving, etc. By carrying out the orders of brahmacharya, household life, vanaprastha, and finally sannyas, one becomes elevated to the perfectional stage of life. Some are then elevated to the heavenly kingdoms, and when they become even more advanced, they are liberated in the spiritual sky, either in the impersonal Brahmajyoti or in the Vaikuntha planets or Krishna Loka. This is the path outlined in the Vedic literatures. The beauty of Krishna consciousness, however, is that by one stroke, by engaging in devotional service, one can surpass all the rituals of the different orders of life. The words idam baditva indicate that one should understand the instructions given by Sri Krishna in this chapter and in the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita. One should try to understand these chapters not by scholarship or mental speculation, but by hearing them in association with devotees. Chapters 7 through 12 are the essence of Bhagavad Gita. The first six and the last six chapters are like coverings for the middle six chapters, which are especially protected by the Lord. If one is fortunate enough to understand Bhagavad Gita, especially these middle six chapters, in the association of devotees, then his life at once becomes glorified beyond all penances, sacrifices, charities, speculations, etc., for one can achieve all the results of these activities simply by Krishna consciousness. One who has a little faith in Bhagavad Gita should learn Bhagavad Gita from a devotee, because in the beginning of the fourth chapter, it is stated clearly that Bhagavad Gita can be understood only by devotees. No one else can perfectly understand the purpose of Bhagavad Gita. One should therefore learn Bhagavad Gita from a devotee of Krishna, not from mental speculators. This is a sign of faith. When one searches for a devotee and fortunately gets a devotee's association, one actually begins to study and understand Bhagavad Gita. By advancement in the association of the devotee, one is placed in devotional service, and this service dispels all one's misgivings about Krishna or God, and Krishna's activities, form, pastimes, name, and other features. After these misgivings have been perfectly cleared away, one becomes fixed in one's study. Then one relishes the study of Bhagavad Gita and attains the state of freely, always feeling always Krishna conscious. In the advanced stage, one falls completely in love with Krishna. This highest perfectional stage of life enables the devotee to be transferred to Krishna's abode in the spiritual sky, Goloka Vrindavan, where the devotee becomes eternally happy. So, does that work for your idea? That just by devotional service, really Prabhupada's emphasizing here association with devotees. And because of that, actually our qualification for advancing in devotional service is Shraddha, it's faith. Yadrishi, Yadrishi, Shraddha, Siddhir, Bhavati, Tadrishi. And as faith increases, as it thickens, we become more advanced in devotional service. In fact, the stages of advancement in devotional service are measured precisely by Rupa Goswami, by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Adau Shraddha Tata Sadhusanga Tabhajana Kriya Tato Narta Nivriti Syat Tato Nishta Ruchistata. So there's the advancement of faith. It begins, the whole process of devotional service begins with Shraddha, or faith. And Shraddha comes by association with devotees, because bhakti comes from bhakti. It doesn't come from anywhere else. It doesn't come from pious activities, but it comes from association with those who have bhakti in their heart. It's described by King Yudhisthira when he spoke about Vidura, that he carried within his heart the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore, he said that anyone who associates with you is associating with a holy place personified. And he said that you go to holy places personified to purify those places. And many other people go there to get purified, but you actually purify the holy places personified. So by association with devotees, one gets Shraddha, or faith, because devotees carry that within their heart. Adau Shraddha Tata Sadhusanga. And by faith, the first impetus after gaining some faith is that I want to associate with devotees. I'm thinking, where can I find some of these people that I can be with? And this is called sadhu sangha. And of course, when you meet sadhus, the first thing they'll do is start giving you some service and helping you to regulate your life. This is called bhajana kriya. We can come into the association of devotees and they'll say, okay, do like this, do like that, chant like this, get up in the morning. And taking, if you enter into that life, you take association with the devotee and strictly follow his instructions, you find a spiritual master who can guide you, then you begin the process of anartha nivritti, which means clearing the unwanted things from the heart. And just by the process itself, as we were discussing, a verse from the third canto of the Bhagavatam, the process itself of bhakti is so powerful that it dissolves the material subtle body, just the way food is digested in the stomach. So through that, one becomes purified of anartas, or unwanted things, which block our progress in devotional service, and gradually comes to the stage of steadiness. And this is called nishta, where he can't be dissuaded anymore by material desires, and he's not bothered by them anymore. And then past that come stages of ruchi, and then attachment, and then bhava, and then prema. And all these things are successively measured by how much one has increased one's shraddha, or one's faith. And particularly, as mentioned in this purport by Srila Prabhupada, that is the most valuable thing. He didn't say that, I just said that, but it's said elsewhere. And it's gained by hearing in the association of devotees, just as we're doing now. So coming to an assemblage of devotees and hearing the Shastra and hearing discussions about Krishna, this is the primary method for advancing in spiritual life. Naturally, in that assembly, satam prasangam mama virya sambido bhavanti krit karna rasayana kata. The kata and the music and the sounds that come from that assembly is so purifying, it's compared to medicine. And generally, medicine you take through the mouth, but this kind of medicine you take through the ear. And then from the ear, it enters into the heart, and from the heart, taj joshanad ashu apavargavartmini, it erases our patterns of material desire. And shraddha ratir bhakti anukramishati, step by step, will make steady progress towards real bhakti, standing in real bhakti, as Prabhupada mentions here. We will come to the stage of love of God by following this. So we're in the right process. It's authorized and it is fully potent. And by strictly sticking to this process to the degree that we do, and to the degree that it's uninterrupted and unmotivated, we'll make rapid progress in devotional service. Because we have a little bit of time left, and last year, although I wasn't here, I heard that we read some of the selected verses from the songbook, from the shloka book of Bhagavad Gita. And also, Bhakta Eric mentioned that he'd like to hear some of the English. So if we look in the Bhagavad Gita, in the shloka book, under the section of Bhagavad Gita, we can read through some of the selected verses here in English, just to get a flavor for the translations. Is that okay? Vipula has agreed. Does anybody else agree? Can we do that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay. All right, so shall we read 5 each and then pass the microphone around and see how far we can get? Is that acceptable? Sonny will be the judge. What do you say? It's okay. Okay, here we go. Dhritarashtra said, page 27, O Sanjaya, after my sons and the sons of Pandu assembled in the place of pilgrimage at Kurukshetra, desiring to fight, what did they do? With the destruction of dynasty, the eternal family tradition is vanquished, and thus the rest of the family becomes involved in irreligion. When irreligion is prominent in the family, O Krishna, the women of the family become polluted, and from the degradation of womanhood, O descendant of Vrishni, comes unwanted progeny. An increase of unwanted population certainly causes hellish life, both for the family and for those who destroy the family tradition. The ancestors of such corrupt families fall down because the performances for offering them food and water are entirely stopped. Sanjaya said, seeing Arjuna full of compassion, his mind depressed, his eyes full of tears, Madhusudana Krishna spoke the following words.
Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my dear Arjuna, how have these impurities come upon you? They are not at all befitting a man who knows the value of life. They lead not to higher planets, but to infamy. O son of Pritha, do not yield to this degrading impotence. It does not become you. Give up such petty weakness of heart, and arise, O chastiser of the enemy. It would be better to live in this world by begging than to live at the cost of the lives of great souls who are my teachers. Even though desiring worldly gain, they are superiors. If they are killed, everything we enjoy will be tainted with blood. Now I am confused about my duty and have lost all composure because of miserly weakness. In this condition, I am asking you to tell me for certain what is best for me. Now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, while speaking learning words, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings. Nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, O Shion of Bharata, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. O best among men, Arjuna, the person who is not disturbed by happiness and distress and is steady in both is certainly eligible for liberation.
Those who are seers of the truth have concluded that of the non-existence, the material body, there is no endurance, and of the eternal, the soul, there is no change. This they have concluded by studying the nature of both. That which pervades the entire body, you should know to be indestructible. No one is able to destroy that imperishable soul. The material body of the indestructible, immeasurable, and eternal living entity is sure to come to an end. Therefore fight, O descendant of Bharata. Neither he who thinks the living entity is the slayer, nor he who thinks it slain is in knowledge, for the self slays nor is slain. For the soul there is neither birth nor death at any time. He has not come into being, does not come into being, and will not come into being. He is unborn, eternal, ever existing, and primeval. He is not slain when the body is slain.
As a person puts on new garments, giving up old ones, the soul similarly accepts new material bodies, giving up the old and useless ones. The soul can never be cut to pieces by any weapon, nor burned by fire, nor moistened by water, nor withered by the wind. This individual soul is unbreakable and insoluble, and can be neither burned nor dried. He is everlasting, present everywhere, unchangeable, immovable, and eternally the same. One who has taken his birth is sure to die, and after death one is sure to take birth again. Therefore, in the unavoidable discharge of your duty, you should not lament. In this endeavor, there is no loss or diminution, and a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear.
Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one, O beloved child of Kurus. The intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. Men of small knowledge are very much attracted by flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruitive activities for elevation to heavenly planets, resultant good birth, power, and so forth. Being desirous of sense gratification and opulent life, they say that there is nothing more than this. In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence, and who are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination for devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. The Vedas deal mainly with the subject of the three modes of material nature. O Arjuna, become transcendental to these three modes, be free from all dualities and from all anxieties for gain and safety, and be established in the Self.
All purposes served by a small well can at once be served by a great reservoir of water. Similarly, all the purposes of the Vedas can be served to one who knows the purpose behind them. You have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you are not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself to be the cause of the results of your activities, and never be attached to not doing your duty. Perform your duty equipoised. O Arjuna, abandoning all attachment to success or failure, such equanimity is called yoga. O Dhananjaya, keep all abominable activities far distant by devotional service, and in that consciousness surrender unto the Lord. Those who want to enjoy the fruits of their works are misers. A man engaged in devotional service rid himself of both good and bad actions even in this life. Therefore strive for yoga, Arjuna, which is the art of all work.
By thus engaging in devotional service to the Lord, great sages or the devotees free themselves from the results of work in the material world. In this way, they become free from the cycle of birth and death and attain the state beyond all miseries by going back to Godhead. When your intelligence has passed out of the dense forest of delusion, you shall become indifferent to all that has been heard and all that is to be heard. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O Partha, when a man gives up all varieties of desires for sense gratification, which arises from mental concoction, and when his mind, thus purified, finds satisfaction in itself alone, then he is said to be in a pure transcendental consciousness. One who is not disturbed in the mind, even amidst the threefold of miseries, are elated when there is happiness, and who is free from attachment, fear, and anger, is called a sage of steady mind. In the material world, one who is unaffected by whatever good or evil he may obtain, neither praising nor despising it, firmly fixed in the perfect knowledge.
The embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for the sense object remains. But seizing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. The senses are so strong and impetuous, O Arjuna, that they forcibly carry away the mind even of a man of discrimination who is endeavoring to control them. One who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control, and fixes his consciousness upon me is known as a man of steady intelligence. While contemplating the objects of senses, a person develops attachment for them, and from such attachment, lust develops, and from lust, anger arises. From anger, complete delusion arises, and from delusion, bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost, and when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool.
But a person free from all attachment and aversion and able to control his senses through regulative principles of freedom can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord. For one thus satisfied, the threefold miseries of material existence exists no longer. In such satisfied consciousness, one's intelligence is so well established. One who is not connected with the Supreme can have neither transcendental intelligence nor a steady mind, without which there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? As a strong wind sweeps away a boat on the water, even one of the roaming senses on which the mind focuses can carry away a man's intelligence.
What is the night for this being, this time to awakeness for the self-controlled, and the time to awaken for all being in the night for the introspective sage? A person who is not disturbed by the incense flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled with, filled but it always still, can alone achieve peace, and not man who strives to satisfy such desires. Not by merely abstaining from the work can one achieve freedom from reaction, nor by renunciation alone can one attain perfection. Everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the quality he has acquired from the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. One who restrains the sense of action but whose mind dwells on sense objects certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender.
On the other hand, if a sincere person tries to control the active senses by the mind and begins karma yoga in Krishna consciousness without attachment, he is by far superior. Perform your prescribed duty, for doing so is better than not working. One cannot even maintain one's physical body without work. Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. Otherwise, work causes bondage in this material world. Therefore, O son of Kunti, perform your prescribed duties for his satisfaction, and in that way you will always remain free from bondage. In the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods along with sacrifices for Vishnu and blessed them by saying, "Be thou happy by this yajna sacrifice, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation." In charge of the various necessities of life, the demigods, being satisfied by the performance of yajna sacrifice, will supply all necessities to you. But he who enjoys such gifts without offering them to the demigods in return is certainly a thief.
The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which is offered first for sacrifice. Others who prepare food for personal sense enjoyment verily eat only sin. All living bodies subsist on food grains which are produced from rains. Rains are produced by the performance of yajna, sacrifice, and yajna is born of prescribed duties. My dear Arjuna, one who does not follow in human life the cycle of sacrifice thus established by the Vedas certainly leads a life full of sin. Living only for the satisfaction of the senses, such a person lives in vain. But for one who takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization, and one who is satisfied in the self alone, fully satiated, for him there is no duty. Whatever action a great man performs, common men follow, and whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues.
O son of Pritha, there is no work prescribed for me within all the three planetary systems, nor am I in want of anything, nor have I need to obtain anything, and yet I am engaged in prescribed duties. If I did not perform prescribed duties, all these worlds would be put to ruination. I would be the cause of creating unwanted population, and I would thereby destroy the peace of all living beings. So as not to disrupt the mind of ignorant man attached to the fruitive result of prescribed duties, a learned person should not induce them to stop work. Rather, by working in the spirit of devotion, he should engage them in all sorts of activity for the gradual development of Krishna consciousness. The spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. One who is in knowledge of the absolute truth, O mighty arm, does not engage himself in the senses and sense gratification, knowing well the differences between the work in devotion and work in fruitive results. Therefore, O Arjuna, surrendering all your works unto me with full knowledge of me, without desires of profit, with no claims to proprietorship, and free from lethargy, fight.
So that's a good verse to end on, because it's come to the time, 8 o'clock. Of course, this is an eternal activity. We're going to go on chanting Bhagavad Gita. But let's remember this verse as where we stopped for tonight. Therefore, Arjuna, surrendering all your works unto me, with full knowledge of me, without desires for profit, with no claims to proprietorship, and free from lethargy, fight. I think it was Franklin Roosevelt who said, it's remarkable how much you can get done if you don't care who gets the credit. And it reminds me in this verse about how you give up no claims of proprietorship. We do a bhakti for bhakti, just for the sake. Fact of the matter is, if we work only and exclusively to please Krishna and the devotees with no desire for any return, then we'll be living in the ocean of returns. It's the way it works, actually. Everyone has it backwards in the material world. So we're trying to reverse the trend by spreading bhakti and by taking bhakti ourselves. And of course, this last instruction to fight is also very important, because preaching, we say preaching means giving, but it also means fighting. Because we have a particular point of view, we have a particular feeling and idea that we've gained, not willy-nilly, but by careful consideration and by comparing sadhu, shastra, guru. And also by personal experience. But everyone in the world has their own conception. Due to the three modes of material nature, we heard in these various chapters, people, they eat in a certain way, they sleep in a certain way, they have determination in a certain way, they worship in a certain way. So we're bringing our own conception out into the world, and everyone say, well, wait a minute, isn't like this, isn't like that, this is how I do it. And therefore, when we go to preach, we're actually transferring our conception of life that we've gained from the Shastra and from association with devotees and from our realization to others. And that's not just an easy thing. It's not something that people just immediately take, but it requires repeated exposure, it requires convincing people. In fact, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, to make one devotee, it takes 20 pounds of blood. Means practically to bring one person a little bit forward in devotional service, and what to speak of someone who actually surrenders and gives their life, because practically, as Prabhupada says in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, nobody wants to go back to Godhead. Everyone wants to stay here. And so to actually wake up somebody and help them to have that conception of life, it's not such an easy thing. It requires fighting. Means, first of all, we must fight with our own tendencies to stay in the material world and actually become determined. And this is all described in the Bhagavad Gita. There are many different kinds of sacrifices. And if we exclusively turn our attention toward the sound vibration of the Vedas, of Krishna consciousness, of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra and the Bhagavad Gita, then very quickly Krishna will reveal himself, because he's already there and he's only waiting for us to turn our attention. And having that experience, it will be easier and easy for us to present it to others and to fill the spirit and feeling of this last verse, to fight against Maya. and to go back home, back to Godhead. So, as I was saying, this is an eternal activity, and tonight we've all taken place. We're all here. Look around, see who's here. Everyone took place. It can't be taken back now because you've already done it. It's on your eternal record. You can make a little check mark like this and go like this. Try it. It feels good. We do it after we finish every Govardhan parikram. It's there. And this will make a lasting impression, eternal impression that we're here. We heard the whole Bhagavad Gita. We showed up for it and we did it. So we'll continue going on like this to have the opportunity to come together with all the devotees and do this. It's a rare thing, and those who are all here are very fortunate. And I feel fortunate to be in your association. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Gita Jayanti ki jai, Gaur Premanande. So now let's put all the books back, and then we'll have the Arti Kirtan, and then prasadam. There's a Gita Jayanti feast being prepared. Hare Krishna.